hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker.
Welcome back to A Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, the Doctor Who commentary podcast. Now, yesterday, we didn't have much commentary, but we had a lot of fun. Today, I'm going to open up instantly with a question which will stimulate your brain cells.
How exciting.
And deliver conversation. I'm here still with the magnificent Dylan Reese.
Hello.
I want to talk to you about over-the-top Doctor Who villains.
Okay.
Please, because I feel that Professor Zaroff ranks.
Yeah.
And I'd like you now, please, to name your top five, like, madly melodramatic villains. And whether you like that sort of thing.
I do like that sort of thing. Sol Deed.
Oh, of course.
This is a top five, but I don't know whether I've got the order. Alan Cumming in the new series, in The Witchfinders.
Oh, my Nubian prince.
Who else?
The Rani?
The Rani is sort of there.
Go to 17, season 17, you'll be all right.
Yeah, I know, but the Rani's there. But I'm also thinking both John Sim and Sacha Dhawan.
If we're talking about Doctor Who actors, John Levine.
Yeah, but he's not a villain, unless you count him in a Yeti suit.
Are you sure?
He's a villain in real life.
If you're a paedophile, he's a villain.
Who else? The list is endless, but I can only think of four for some reason.
But the trouble is, in the new series...
Oh, Cecere of Diplos.
Oh, Augury.
Yeah. But there's many more. The new series has got a few, I think.
But it's less so, I think. I think the acting's become a bit more naturalistic.
A bit more nuanced. But I feel like they go the other way.
Go on.
Like,
not too boring.
Like, you know, what's-his-face in The Power of Three? He's given it such an earnest performance that it's almost laughable in a different way.
We didn't want to be there, though,
of course, of course.
Like, well, look at Keely Hawes in Time Heist. Yeah. That should have been madly over the top.
Yeah, but she's playing it a little...
I don't remember a thing about it.
I know it's a cliche, but Keely Hawes as the Rani should have happened by now.
Oh, I know. Well, Jesus. Every single middle-aged woman that's cast...
Everybody goes at the Rani.
Yeah. So let's just make it the Rani and get it over and done with.
We're never going to see the Rani. There's a reason Big Finish don't use her. It's because the estate of Pip and Jane Baker, and indeed Pip and Jane Baker didn't really like the Rani being used. And then there was a brief moment when just Pip was alive that they used the Rani twice. And then when Pip died and the estate reverted to their kids or whoever, it was...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because Jane didn't want them being...
Oh. Used.
That's my understanding anyway.
But definitely ruled the roost.
She did. But they let Bill Baggs use her.
What, for Rani...
Reaps the whirlwind.
Have you heard that?
I've heard it several times. I need to do it on...
Have you covered it?
No, I need to do it at some point.
That fella playing the Tetrap is incredible.
I do need to do that at some point, so maybe you'll get the invite.
I'm always there for it, right? Anything you invite me to do, I'm there.
Maybe we could do a Rani special with her two big Finnish outings and that.
Okay, we're there.
I don't know whether the universe can handle that.
And how does Zaroff rank?
He's fairly high up there, but I don't think he's quite as over-top as people think he is. I think this is quite an over-the-top story, and I think the priest, the camp priest, is more over-the-top than Zaroff is. Yeah. It's just the famous cliffhanger that I think really...
I think this episode is to blame for people thinking he's madly over the top. But one, because of the cliffhanger. Two, this is where he's sort of running around going, ha, 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 you know.
And the clips that... When you got clips from classic Doctor Who in the 90s and they wanted to show how shit it was, like, be it Resistance is Useless or 30 Years in the TARDIS, and like, it would always be from this episode.
The cliffhanger.
The cliffhanger, and also, Doctor! Does that scene where he does that?
And he blows the pepper in his face,
doesn't he? Yeah, exactly.
The recorder and all of that.
Yeah, so that tended to show up a lot. And while it is indicative of the story, I think it's probably the most over the top it gets. And then you throw in the Dance of the Fish People.
I've never made any secret of the fact that I have a bit of a penchant for camp over the top Doctor Who.
Mm.
Now, you've recently, twice, I believe, podcasted about Dragonfire, which is quite camp and over the top.
I do like camp over the top Doctor Who, but I like it in classic Doctor Who. I think the new series very rarely pulls it off. That doesn't mean that it can't. I just think a lot of the time it comes across as silly.
Do you know, the one that I always go to is Voyage of the Damned and that guy at the end.
Voyage of the Damned is what happens if you give gay men too much power.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
Not.
I have no power at all.
It's the most, I mean, it's great fun, but it's the most self-indulgent camp bit of madness that's ever been aired in the name of Doctor Who.
Since this will be being released in 6 months' time, I can actually, in fact, reveal that Voyage of the Damned won my Christmas specials Strictly Come Master. But I think it's just because of its mass appeal.
Yeah.
Rather than...
It's got a little-known star of Neighbours in called Kylie Minogue.
Who?
Kylie Minogue. Yeah, but the lesser famous sister of Danny Minogue.
Oh, of X Factor fame.
And QVC's Danny Minogue.
Well, on that note, shall we skip into part three?
Let's do it.
Okay.
So this is...
Straight in.
This is the most... seen bit of Underwater Menace episode 3 because it's the one that's existed for the longest amount of time.
I thought you meant the title sequence. No. You mean the episode, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. This was on the Lost in Time box set.
It was on that, but it was first released on VHS in the missing years. So I feel like the set contained The Reign of Terror on one VHS and then this... The Missing Years documentary was on the Ice Warriors. The other VHS contained episode 3 of this, episode 1 of The Web of Fear, and the 2 episodes of The Faceless Ones, and came in a little box.
Yeah, I remember.
You got a little 40th anniversary badge.
Do you remember when the only way you could... I never got a badge.
Oh, well, you fucked it, mate. You're owed one. Take it back to Woolies.
Yeah, how far do you think I'll get? Oh, no, they're still going in Belgium. I'll go all the way over
there.
There
you go, perfect.
Do you remember when the single episodes that survived were on the early years and the Troughton years and all of that?
Those tapes.
I love Pertwee's. You know, many British films, including The Wicked Lady, was filmed. You know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I love those tapes. The Daleks, the early years, and the Cybermen, the early years, were the best ones.
The Daleks was the Daleks Master Plan, wasn't it?
Two episodes of Daleks Master Plan. An episode of Evil of the Daleks. I think that's it.
I loved the Shrouded one. Do you know why? Because to this day, I love Space Pirates episode 2.
Me too.
We are going to be too late again.
I can't wait for them to animate the Space Pirates and everyone to fucking love it.
Spare me another size bridge.
I would nominate Space Pirates to do for this, but the recon, not that it's bad, but there's just so little to grasp
it's
on.
It's repeated
to...
footage over the episode 1, you know, where they go in the spacesuit and they've got those film trims of them in the spacesuits in space.
Yeah.
You just watch that again and again in episode 1.
Oh, I remember when I first met you and your other half in real life, having a long conversation with Mark about the Space Pirates, and he's like, it's great, there's a man that hides under a table in it.
I mean, that's Doctor Who fans for you, isn't it? It's the first time we meet in person and we end up talking about the Space Pirates.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everyone said everything they need to say about Pyramids of Mars.
Well, clearly about the Underwater Menace as well. Oh, here's Lolum.
Yeah.
Oh, Amdo, Amdo. Oh, so the Doctor's going to be executed now, isn't he?
Yeah, but...
And how they get him out of this by going inside the great statue of Amdo.
Going inside statue's mouth.
Oh, it's Ben in there as well.
Yeah. It's a big... I mean, he's a big camp priest, isn't he, this guy? What did you say his name is?
Lolum.
Lolum.
I'm going to now make a suggestion that they are... possibly making a critique on organised religion.
Possibly.
Here.
I don't think Jeffrey will go that deeply.
I'm trying, all right?
Yeah. What you mean with the closeted gay man as the priest as well?
Well, yeah.
I love that even the way he raises his arms in this is as camp as his character on TV.
Yeah. And they haven't sort of slimmed him up a bit.
No. Yaru.
Oh, dear.
I wonder, I'm not going to Google it, but I wonder what other sort of characters that guy played.
Oh, please Google it.
All right.
Go on. What's his name? Someone Jevons.
Oh, I don't know. Hang on.
You have a look, and I'll talk about religion in Doctor Who.
Yeah,
Who
yeah. You
okay.
Lay a subtext that definitely isn't there.
Okay. Oh. I don't think the statue had rubies for eyes either, you know, in the original.
No, it just had a big black hole.
I'm supposed to be the person that fulfills that role in this podcast.
No.
You seen many big black holes in your life?
One or two. It was played by Peter Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going on.
He did play Billy Bunter, I know that.
Did he really?
Yeah. That's because that's effectively it's his character that they based the character on in Celestial Toymaker.
Mm. Hang on. Peter Stevens, IMDb. We are learning all about a lot of dead people here, aren't we? He was born in 1920 and died in 1972, age 52. That is no time to die.
That's 10 years for me.
Oh, God. I mean, it's 12 for me. I hope I don't die the same age as Billy Bunter. His last appearance was in something called Arthur of the Britons.
Oh.
And his...
Wow, that is a long profile. I think most actors would be quite happy with a profile that long.
And his first appearance was 1948 in something called The Immortal Lady, where he played the Venetian ambassador. Now, is there anything that I might have on DVD that I can see him in? Or Wacko, I don't know what that is. Armchair Theatre. Oh, it's all the same shit that everybody around this time. There's Dixon and Doc Green.
It was a sort of incestuous pool, wasn't it? They all popped up on every single show. The Avengers.
I mean, I haven't seen the Danger Man.
Danger Man, there you go.
I've got that on DVD, so...
I'll just see the Tomorrow People.
No, the Treasure Seekers.
Oh.
But that's not to say the Tomorrow People won't be on here.
What do you think about this intriguing power struggle between the political leader of Atlantis and Professor Zaroff?
Well... It's a weird one, because they're both... Like, Zaroff isn't technically in charge, is he? It is the other guy.
Yeah.
So, I don't know... Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether it quite works. Oh, he's an Adamant Lives. Sorry, oh. I'm still on our mate. He is in an episode of the Avengers. Anyway.
Peter Stevens, we salute you and your career. And yes. We're sorry you died so young.
Yeah, but you did a lot in that time. But, you know, he's from a time where they mainly ate liver, isn't he?
I used to eat liver when I was younger. Liver and onions.
Yeah, that's what you did.
It didn't do me any harm.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Yeah, my mind is bent because of the liver and onions. Professor Zaroff, his plan is to destroy the whole of Atlantis, to be like the one scientist that manages to raise it out of the water.
No, he raises it out of the water, but in doing so will destroy the planet.
Yeah, why?
Because, and this is down to that thing of the pulpy nature of the plot not being thought through because it's only a kid's show, because why not? It's a bonkers scheme. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. So the only thing you can say is because he's fucking mad.
But, like, nobody will be left alive to see his great work. The consequence of it, I mean.
No. I mean, that is a flaw in his plan. But and I think it is discussed in this. It's sort of lightly touched over. But
you'd have to send a boy out into space that said, I did it, Professor Zaroff.
Lots of love.
With all the rubble going around it.
Yeah.
It's a bit crazy. Well, no, the bit scene where the doctor says to him, why do you want to blow up the world? And he goes, you a scientist? Ask me why! And that's about as much depth as we get.
It's the achievement. Troughton's arms really do change length from scene to scene in these animations, don't they? They look a bit short there.
Oh, it's worse than Fury from the Deep. It's terrible. Yeah. Like, somebody must have looked at that animation and gone... You know what, they are out of proportion with his body.
Well, it's because it's not, because it's a different aspect ratio. They're like, we need to fill the screen with something, so we'll just make their arms longer.
That's not a question I haven't asked you about, actually. And I think it's because we're watching an animation, and look at this market in the animation. It's massive.
It's so much better.
It's just a little pole, isn't it, in the original?
I wish Polly was wearing that get up in the original as well.
Dirty kit. Like, how do you rate Troughton? Like, is he one of your favourites?
Is he one of my favourites? I have real trouble rating the classic Doctors, if I'm perfectly honest.
You love them all?
I love them all.
Even Peter Davison?
I don't mind Davo.
Your brother likes him.
Yeah, I know he does. Davo's probably my least favourite of the classic Doctors, but then whenever I sit down to watch season 21, I'm like, oh, I just, once he's got rid of the crowded kid TARDIS, I'm like, I can get with him. Once Turlough arrives, basically, and Nyssa's fucked off, I'm more into him.
Poor Nyssa.
Not because of Nyssa, I just think the whole of the time and space, and you want to get back to fucking Heathrow.
Yeah.
Nothing against Janet Fielding, who I think plays the role she's given great.
I could have done with a year with Davison and Nicola Bryan.
Yeah, me too.
I think that might be quite interesting.
Me too. Now, but yeah, I do Triton is one of my, as a kid, probably not, but in my sort of mid to late teens, I would say Triton was my favourite at one point.
I like the fact that he allows the Doctor to be scared.
Yeah.
With Pertwee and with Baker, they're always so fucking stalwart, aren't they? Yeah. Sort of standing there posing or taking the piss. Whereas Troughton does that sort of, oh my word, you know. All I really like that because I think as a young man, that made me scared. If the Doctor was scared, I was scared.
The eras I'm most likely to revisit of classic Doctor Who are the Seventh Doctor and the First Doctor. And then after that, it's probably Troughton and then Colin Baker.
Why the First Doctor?
I just think it's magical.
Yeah.
I think it's like, it's so far removed from the show we know, and they're sort of making it up as they go along, and I just think it's brilliant.
Oh, you know, I did a commentary for the Mythmakers last week, and we did 1 to 3, and I had never really given it much consideration. It was a revelation how good it was.
It's bloody great, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to believe it's only a season before this. This sophisticated, not this. That, yeah, I mean,
in the same season, you've got the Celestial Toymaker, don't you? Which is a bag of old dicks.
Yeah. So, well, no, I can see what they're going for in Toymaker.
Yeah.
I can't, don't think they can execute it well.
No.
And two, the script went for all those revisions.
Mm.
I don't think this script went for any revisions at all.
No, it feels like they just did draft one. Here you are, make that, and they struggle.
Dude, this feels like proper Doctor Who now. They're just running around chasing Zaroff, aren't they?
And they run around in the real version, but it feels better here because there's more than two sets. Yeah. It is such a fucking, this is the definition of an episode 3 run around, isn't it?
Although it does end with Zaroff taking complete control.
Yeah.
And getting his guards to shoot the guy and try. Oh, there it is. There's that scene with the pepper.
And he throws it through his recorder as well.
The worst scene in this, right, is I can't believe it made the cut. And because we have episode 3, you can watch it, is the bit where he goes to the priest. Oh, I'm dying. Let me feel the aura of your goodness. The way of tricking him.
Right, we're about to, so they're turning the fish people against everyone else to stop them picking the plankton. So we're about to
average
get to
everyday events.
Yeah, absolutely. But it means we're about to get to everyone's, one of the most iconic scenes in Doctor.
I literally cannot remember how it looks animated. Is it as good? Is it better?
It's different. I mean, you're about to see, my friend. You're about to see.
The original looked pretty good, I seem to recall. They're just going around on Kirby wires.
Yeah, I like the original.
But there was actual like bubbles you could see.
Because I think what they do is they're on Kirby wires in a studio, but then they put like a glass tank in front of it with bubbles and stuff, if I remember correctly.
These animated faces for the fish people look very like the prisoners that come out of the cells in the Sharda animation.
Oh,
I wonder if the same people are doing it, you know.
Once you're drawing it, you're drawing it, haven't you?
Yes. But shouldn't this be the companions convincing them to rebel? Like, do we need Jacko and Sean?
No, these characters are not needed. Not needed at all. But it's nice to have them.
We're already in a situation where lines are having to be shared between Ben and Jamie.
Yeah, and then you write a few more people in.
And then you add extra characters. I mean, that is something I've heard thrown at Chibnall before, and I don't entirely disagree, especially in Series 12, where he has these huge guest casts, and there ain't enough for the regulars to do.
No, absolutely. Right, here we go. The banging tune. He's doing, I mean,
I'm not sure it is better than the original.
I think what they're doing here is like, obviously you can't talk underwater, so it's almost like a sign language.
In the original, the fella comes down on the Kirby wire and just waves his arms to say, no, no, stop working. What's he doing now?
He's doing a little dance.
He's sort of...
he gets his dick out in a minute as well. He's taking his clothes off. It's a striptease. I think it's quite elegantly done.
Oh, I think the original might be better, though.
It is, but, you know, I'm into this.
This looks like the sort of thing that J&T would put on the end of the pier at Christmas time. Starring Colin Baker and Nicola Bryant.
Yeah, and anybody from EastEnders is available.
I do like the more experimental score, though, you know, because I think Dudley can get a bit
repetitive. I'm not a big Dudley guy. I like bits of it, but I just, like you say, it's too repetitive. By the time I get to the Tom Baker era, I'm really bored of Dudley Simpson.
You listen to his scores in Troughton's time, though.
Yeah.
So, like, the Ice Warriors are that sort of...
Yeah, he's really trying. It feels like in the Tom Baker era, he's phoning it in, and then you listen to Blake Seven, and it's like, oh, it's basically the same score. It's the
same music, yeah.
Yeah, with this four-piece of a band.
And anything that's sort of done, it's like Douglas Adams is writing, doing Hitchhikers and doing The Pirate Planet.
Yeah.
There's overlap. It's like you listen to, oh God, I'm going way off now, but you listen to Dalek War and Jubilee, which is done exactly the same time.
Yeah.
They sound very similar. They share actors.
Yeah.
You know, I think, if you're doing a lot at the same time, then, oh, here we go. Zaroth just fainted. God, I'm having a heart attack.
A lot of people don't have heart attacks in Doctor Who. It's not really the way to dispatch people.
I can't think of many, you know.
Well, people die of fright in the poetry era, I don't know.
She was found in the barn, paralysed with fear. She may have seen something. this shitty scene's coming up in a minute.
Shitty scene?
Yeah.
This is Doctor Who, there are no shitty scenes.
Dylan allowed me to feel the aura of your goodness. Look at the way the tentacles come down in this this animated version of Amdo.
Yeah, Amdo before just looked a bit shit, but Amdo here feels like a god of the sea.
So they're all sort of praising the set in the documentary.
Really?
But I think for the time, for the money...
I suppose it's a big mouth in the middle of a set, yeah.
Right. You can do a lot of things with a big mouth.
You can. I wonder what... all those sets just got junked, right?
Yeah.
Even the special wall.
Well,
even
it doesn't wall. It doesn't matter if things are kept. You recently broke a news to me that fabulous props and things were destroyed in terrible fires.
Yeah, those were the props, though. That's different. But of course you wouldn't keep sets. What am I talking about? Whenever we make a set, we get rid of it and destroy it.
What on earth? What other productions are going to use the face of Amdo?
Well, I don't know. I might have use for it. Put it in my living room. We don't need a telly. We could just have the face of Amdo there.
It's like that story that Barry Letts tells about Agador from Monster of Peladon, isn't it? He kept the statue and put it outside his office.
Yeah.
It's like to ward people off and things like that. When they realised that he had a prop there, they were absolutely livid.
Really?
Like the higher-ups, yeah.
Well, John Pertwee kept Bok, the model of Bok, and Peter Purvis kept the Trilogic game from... Celestial Toymaker.
Oh my God, and did you hear about that? He threw it away, didn't he?
Yeah, because he got no work and he thought it was cursed.
And then he, years later, he's like, I'm going to make a fucking fortune with that. Oh, that bit there, right, where after the aura of your goodness, where he stabbed him with the spear on the screen, right, you don't see it going in. You just see the spear go down and then it sort of wobbles in screen. It's terrible.
It's all very theatre, isn't it? But as you say, like they've got the same resources as Dougie Camfield did.
Can I ask you a question as a person that works in television now?
Yeah.
Do you think that performance styles have improved? I know they've changed because this basically was theatre on the television. To your preference, have things changed for the better? Because I feel like things are a lot more naturalistic now.
I mean, yes, I think they have, but it depends what you want from your entertainment, doesn't it? Like, I love nothing more than sitting and watching an old bit of 60s TV with a massive performance, but I would never... Like, I think it would be a dangerous thing to work on something like that now, unless it was a spoof like Toast of London.
Or what was that Inside Number 9 one where they were aping... 60s and 70s television, Devil of Christmas,
the
Graham Harper directed one. Yeah. You see, now all of this is done as comedy now, isn't it? As a piss take.
But again, and I'm sure we've said this before on this podcast, you show this versus the Pyramids of Mars to somebody now and they will think it's the same style of acting.
What? I think they prefer this, though.
Yeah, at least it's a lot of fun. They'd have a laugh. I think the Pyramids of Mars would probably come across as a bit boring, to be perfectly honest.
Are you not keen on Pyramids of Mars?
Sorry, though. Jeremy Bentham. No, it's great. I'm just using it as an example as a classic, you know, they're like a much lauded classic from times gone by.
I know that Jeremy Bentham, when he could go on Toby Halo's, what's it called? His commentary podcast.
Yeah.
He chose, I think it was the Daleks Master Plan or something like that, you know. Right. Proper Doctor Who, you know, yeah, not this new stuff.
Proper Doctor Who.
New woke 12. Stuff. won't you? This has got a black man in it.
Yeah, but it didn't back in the day, did it?
Yeah, Jacko.
Oh, yeah, no, you're right, yeah.
And an Irishman, you know. Oh. It's got a gay man in it. Yeah. Leland the Priest.
Yeah.
Oh, Doctor Who's gone so woke.
What Leland the Priest did to Ando's mouth when the camera was down, you don't want to know.
Oh, no, I do. Can we see it, please?
There isn't a huge amount of women in this society, though, is there?
No, there's Ara, and that's it.
Yeah. You so know, the priest...
They saw Polly and all their eyes lit up.
Yeah, that priest's probably seen a fair bit of action then.
I think, is this the end of the episode?
I think it is, yeah.
Bloody hell, we've shot through this one.
Yeah, well, it's...
here we go. Your people, they are my people!
The accent is all over the place. But ultimately, Zaroff's won the power struggle here, hasn't he?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Well, what about... Troughton in Enemy of the World, that accent was all over the place as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I mean, people are quick to criticise this guy, yeah. But, like, it wouldn't pass today's standards, would it?
I love Salamander.
Me too.
You try, you fail. So, uh-huh.
The moon doesn't fall out of the sky.
Sit down, have a drink.
I used to quote that from about the age of 10 to people. Have you read the comic with Salamander in?
Is there one?
Oh, yeah, we covered it on Too Hot for TV but about 18 months ago.
Well, I've heard all your episodes. How have I done...
There's a third Doctor story. It's fucking brilliant.
Third Doctor and Salamander.
Written by Paul Cornell, and it's fucking brilliant.
Here we go.
What a guy.
Nothing in the world will stop him now. Except possibly death by drowning.
Yes, which you should have foreseen coming, living in Atlantis, really, shouldn't they?
Can I ask, are you still as gripped by the Underwater Menace?
I've been thoroughly gripped throughout this.
I'll let go then. I'll see you all to be there.